championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazin. I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook as always. You guys should listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. So we know it's been a week, and we forgot to tell y'all that we're doing the show every other week over the summer. I know some people on Twitter have been asking, you know, where's the show? But that's the schedule now because, hey, it's the summer and during the offseason, it's hard to make up news. We're not a 24/7 news cycle here at the Hornscast. I know Joe just made a surprised face, but I mean, hey, that's just us. That's just us. But today we're going to be talking about some crazy news that's happened over the past few weeks. Brew McCoy is gone from Texas. One of the craziest recruitment stories ever just got even crazier. Zach Evans, Texas's top running back. Targets one of the best players in Texas to come out of Texas in quite a while. No longer looking at Texas, but Texas did get JaQuindon Jackson, so we'll talk about what he brings to the table. And then also, Texas Football Magazine comes out, and guess who's on the cover? Our boy Sam Ehlinger. So we're going to talk about what him being on the front cover means. So, Joe, tell me, what was your all-time favorite plays of noted Texas alum Brew McCoy?
It might have been that one catch in the spring game. I think that's up, stands out there for everybody. It was a great time in Longhorn history, and I understand that Brew had a personal decision to make, but I'm glad he was part of one of the most prosperous spring games in Texas football history.
Oh yeah, I think one of my favorite parts of his career at Texas was his YouTube video on accountability at Texas when he was receiving the Maxwell Award. That had just happened right as he had switched from USC to Texas. It was already the craziest story out there. It was the beginning of the transfer portal. It was sort of like the downfall of the NCAA's stranglehold on players. But, you know, this crazy story got crazier, man. And Brew McCoy decides, hey, you know, I'm done with Texas after, you know, he hasn't even played his first game yet. He hasn't even entered his real freshman year, and he has already transferred and then transferred again. It's absolutely insane, this story. It's never happened before.
There's no question this is probably the wildest recruiting story I think in any of us are ever going to see. I mean, this is a kid who was a lifelong USC fan and lived in USC's shadow. And Texas gave him every reason to think about going somewhere else. And that's a credit to Texas. And as we learned the first time around, it didn't quite go that way. He signed a letter of intent. For some reason, you know, Cliff Kingsbury leaving USC really had an effect on him. And he decided that, you know, he felt misled or just didn't feel like USC was the place for him anymore, obviously, and decided to go to Texas. And then after those great memories during the spring game that we'll all hold and cherish forever, and some back and forths between player personnel departments from both USC and Texas, we thought the story was done until, you know, about, I think, on Sunday night going into Memorial Day, very late, you see all the chatter on the USC sites start to come out. And I think that's extremely telling. I think that the fact that news of Brew McCoy's impending transfer broke, maybe not 1,000 miles away, since Brew was probably, I believe, back home after classes were finished. But the fact that news of an impending transfer from Texas broke from a bunch of USC websites should kind of say, that obviously how much it blindsided a lot of the people within the Texas program who were extremely surprised. And obviously, I think a lot of the Texas sites and, you know, me, I think we were all a little bit surprised to hear that, you know, Brew McCoy, this kid who had already transferred to Texas, is thinking about transferring back again. So
yeah,
I say this, it could be something that, and you know, happens again. And players have been transferring all the time. Players get homesickness all the time. So it could happen again. I don't think it's something that you can blame 100% on the portal. But this is probably something that I don't plan on seeing something like this ever again. But I think that could that could change.
Yeah, and I don't think him leaving USC the first time really had much to do with Cliff Kingsbury. I think there was sort of like a, he has a lot of strings tugging on him all at once. He has his parents, he has a personal relationships back home. He doesn't know what he wants. I think that had a lot to do of him saying, hey, you know, I want to go ahead and take a look at getting outside the bubble of USC and going and trying out Texas. And then as soon as he gets to Texas, it seems like there was a little bit of a culture shock as soon as he got here. You know, he was shocked by how obsessed people were with both him and football down here. Apparently, when he'd go out, there were just people looking to meet him. And there was no laid-backness of the culture like there is at USC. There was a lot more intensity. He didn't get as much, you know, special treatment that he does at USC, that USC players get to have. On top of that, he gets to be home next to his parents. He gets to be next home close to his girlfriend. And he also gets sort of the, I don't know if it's called glamour, but the comfortability of the bubble of USC. He didn't realize, you know, he didn't want it when he was at USC. He wanted to be at Texas, where it was be more like a university experience. And that's what he was telling people. And then he got here, and it seemed like as soon as he got here, he was like, I really miss the bubble. It was a lot nicer back there. And so as soon as he got back home, he was like, I missed the glamour. I missed the bubble of USC. I missed being close to everybody and being home. And he moved right on back. I feel like it's just as simple as that. He didn't, it's not that he wasn't gelling with the culture here. He might not have been all for the intensity, but it wasn't just that. I think it was the intensity was a little bit too much for him, on top of the fact that, you know, he just wasn't used to it. He wasn't used to it. And these Texas players, you know, you saw it. They were the ones who really said the reason behind it. You know, Caden Stearns' tweet out, hey, this culture, this program is not for everybody. And people thought they were tweeting that at Zach Evans. No, that was a direct tweet at Brew McCoy, or not direct, subtweet at Brew McCoy, talking about, hey, you know, I guess this just isn't it. This intensity, the craziness here isn't for you. And, you know, hey, if he's not going to be okay with the intensity, with the culture, then you can't have him.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out for the parties involved. And, you know, Brew had an opportunity to go back to an environment that he wanted and took advantage of it. And I guess the good thing for Texas is, I've said this before, he was already kind of found money anyway. You weren't expecting to go into 2019 with him. And then all of a sudden he transfers into your school, into your program, and possibly could get a waiver to play in his first year. The thing is A, he wasn't probably going to take over for Colin Johnson at the X wide receiver position unless Brew just blew everybody away, blew a 4-year starter out of the water, you know, at that spot. It probably wasn't going to happen. And at the H position, the slot wide receiver position, he might have been able to get some snaps there, but it was definitely going to be a huge learning experience for him because, you know, outside receivers like him, who could fit into that role, aren't used to playing that role and have to learn a little bit of how to be, you know, play on the inside. And that's something that guys like Jake Smith and even Josh Moore already on campus have a pretty good grasp of. So it's not like he was going to overtake Colin Johnson or even Malcolm Epps. He probably would have competed with Epps at X. It's not like he was going to, you know, immediately come in and contribute, maybe get 600 something yards, a couple touchdowns this year. But he was going to get a couple snaps and, you know, make the future, give him a little bit of experience for the future once life without Colin Johnson and Devin Duvernay had to start. But the thing is, you know, if Texas really wants to get back into the realm of winning conference championships, competing for national championships, competing in the playoffs, you need these five-star talents. You need people like Brew McCoy to be on your team because you're probably going to be going against five-star corners and, you know, against other five-star defensive backs. So you're probably going to want the best guy available that, you know, on your team trying to get the ball to and receiving those catches on your team. So it's not a big hit in 2019. And although he probably would have seen some snaps and, you know, given a bright glimpse of the future. But for 2020 and 2021, for a guy who a lot of people think is probably probably going to be a three-year player anyway with how talented he is, that's where it hurts, because that's, you know, when you have that you don't have Colin Johnson anymore, but you're very likely to have a senior Sam Ehlinger. You want a five-star talent for Sam Ehlinger to throw to when, you know, Sam Ehlinger is gone in a couple of years, gone on very likely to the NFL, I'd like to think. You want whoever's going to be the guy replacing Sam Ehlinger to have a five-star talent like Brew McCoy, you know, there to make things a little bit easier. So the impact here is, even though it was found money, you put that found money into your budget once you got it, and right. Now you got to have to go ahead and take that out of the budget. The good news is I think, as pretty much everybody has noted, is that you still have a pretty good wide receiver class coming in, even though one has kind of become a running back in Jordan Whittington. You've got clear fits for everything. You've got, Marcus Washington. You got Kennedy Lewis, Jake Smith. Like, this is, and am I forgetting anybody? I think that's everybody. So you've already got a class with plenty, with fits at all three of your wide receiver spots. Brew was and Jordan, before he moved to running back, where it's going to be just kind of found money. You wish you had Brew McCoy, but you're not going to be lacking numbers. You're not going to be lacking depth, at least this year, at that position.
Right. For all the positions that you could have lost a player of this magnitude, wide receiver is the one. Like, that's the one that you could have dealt with, because wide receiver at Texas is absolutely stacked. It has been stacked for the past few years, and especially last year we saw what that did. This year it's pretty much going to be the same. You're going to have a lot of wide receiver talent on the field at all times. So, like you said, it sucks. It really sucks for the future. It sucks for the future of this position, where you need a guy who is going to be that top talent. But immediately, they can deal with it. They can go out and say, hey, Johnny Wilson, you can be this guy instead. Or, hey, Troy O'Mare, you can be this guy instead. Or Quentin Johnson, you can be this guy instead. Or anybody down the line, you can be this guy instead. They're going to have players. Jake Smith, again, an incredible player. More of what Tom Herman really wants for that slot position. You have players. Going back to the reason why he left, it just seems like, you know, things like family relations and the bubble pulled him back to USC. Texas tried to go back, did a last round, tried to get him and circle the wagons. I don't think they brought the right guy in Brian Carrington, but Brian Carrington was also out of the country, so it's kind of difficult to get him on a plane to come back immediately. Because, I mean, Brian Carrington, Drew Maringer were the two guys, the reasons that he was back here. And, you know, honestly, people are going to crap on Drew Maringer for this, but Drew Maringer is the reason, or one of the big reasons, that Brew McCoy is here. He formed a great relationship with that family, with Brew McCoy himself. He's formed great relationships with guys like Marcus Washington and that family. He's done quite a good job, actually, as a recruiter. So, you know, this sucks. It's a miss. You need a five-star talent like Brew McCoy in your program to be a national championship contender for the future. So losing out on a guy like that really sucks, really does. And speaking of that, losing out on a five-star talent, Zach Evans. Boy, I mean, what a swing and a miss there. The guy is in your state. He's in the city that you recruit the best. He has Texas ties all around him, and you miss out on his top five. Oklahoma makes his top five. How? You know.
How? Quote from Oklahoma people, too.
Right, exactly. But you also have Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State on there, and what was the last one? And LSU. LSU. What? He wants a national championship contender. Guy, a team that has been in the national championship recently. Picture. LSU. Anyways, I think really the reason for not going to Texas, I think he got tied up in one SEC. I think he got tied up in other things that go on in recruiting. And, you know, this one falls on Stan Drayton. I don't see how there's any other way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I agree that it doesn't 100% fully fall upon Stan Drayton, but he does bear a lot of the you know, you can definitely look his way for a lot of the blame. I think when you have a huge running back in your state that, although national programs are after, that have a more of a recent winning pedigree in history,
you should at least be able to make his top five.
Exactly. You should at least be able to make the top five. And I know basically every recruiting person covering this recruitment has said this is going to be a wild ride all the way until the very end. And it is. And, you know, I think you can see, in my opinion, I don't know if how much of a look Zach was ever really given to UT, especially towards the end, you know, in the last month and a half towards his recruitment, last month and a half towards his top five. I'm not sure how much he ever really strongly considered UT, and that definitely is something that you have to, you know, look at Stan Drayton and ask him what's going on here. I mean, let's go ahead and look at the fact that he was going to come to Jambalaya, and as soon as the main show got canceled, he just turned around and went back home to Houston. Didn't even make it to Austin to see the visit. I believe he is on record as saying, you know, I didn't even watch the Sugar Bowl, the Sugar Bowl against Georgia.
Apparently he didn't.
And, yeah, and
according to his comments, no, he didn't watch the Sugar Bowl at all.
And somehow, you know, Georgia spins it to, oh, they just barely beat us. So, you know, they apparently barely losing is enough to, you know, overcome. And then, you know, you and I both know Chris Hummer, and, you know, he did a great job with that story, putting those quotes out. But Chris got the quote from Zach that said, Texas, I don't know. I don't know if you can win a national title there or something like that. It just, overall, it sounds like there was a lot of people thinking like, oh, he's from Texas, he's in Texas. You know, you've got the guy who he runs Zeke Run is his Twitter name. You got the guy who coached Ezekiel Elliott, recruited Ezekiel Elliott, you know, at Texas. You think the math makes sense that he should at least be in the top five. But, you know, he never seemed to really take Texas, at least in the past year, before his recruitment really started taking off and becoming the national circus that it will for a five-star, you know, top two running back in the country. It just never seemed like he took a huge interest in Texas. Like, Texas was a program he was that serious about. That serious about joining. And I know Texas was very serious about wanting him, you know, that level of talent joining the program, but overall all the efforts that Texas did just weren't enough to get into his top five or for, you know, Texas to really be seriously considered by him.
Yeah, so much so that they really entertained Damian George, even though they probably could have gone after a guy like Nate Anderson or, you know, a few other guys across the country. In fact, you know, I think a lot of this had to do with, you know, Texas not really taking Damian George seriously and I feel like Zach Evans kind of figured out, hey, these guys don't really like Damian George as much as they're saying. And then that got around to Damian George. Damian George obviously convinced Alabama over, you know, I didn't even think about Texas. Texas is a second thought, an afterthought. Zach Evans is a quote unquote package deal with Damian George. Probably also Kendall Milton, who obviously didn't have a great experience with Texas either. So this kind of goes down to Stan Drayton did not do a good job again in this cycle. You know, but John Robinson is the next guy up that Texas is looking at, and he's a great running back. I mean, this to miss on a five-star guy, yeah, missing a Zach Evans really sucks. You know, but glass half full, look at this, is damn, there are a lot of really good running backs in this cycle. Like, really good running backs. There are a ton. I don't think I've ever seen this many five-star caliber running backs in a cycle in a very long time.
Yeah.
So Texas then goes to Bijan Robinson and has Tim Beck with the hookups in Arizona, right?
Right.
What were you going to say?
No, I was about to say, it's like you're mentioning, with so many five-star backs this cycle that are interested in Texas, it's a good thing for Stan Drayton that, yes, while he did not succeed with the Zach Evans part of the 2020 running back, you know, get your guy, he's still got a couple guys he can still go get. Obviously, with Bijan Robinson, you're definitely, like you mentioned, using Tim Beck's connections to Arizona. But Texas still looks good and is in a position to fight for Jace McClellan. There's still several running backs within the region, even within Austin, that, you know, are getting looks by Stan Drayton. So he's gonna, you know, he did not do the best job, obviously, with Evans and missing the top five, but he's going to have an opportunity to, you know,
bounce back.
Bounce back's a perfect way to put it. But
he has a nice backboard this year.
Right.
This year he has a nice backboard to make him look good.
But even with those struggles, Stan Drayton's not the first assistant coach at the University of Texas to struggle getting traction with a North Shore player. I mean, the last North Shore player to sign with Texas was Tristian Houston in that 2015 class, and I think he got like 3 carries in his career or something like that. You can look at Caleb Von Chasen. You can look at Eric Monroe. I think he went to North Shore.
Here, I can find out real fast.
I think Eric Monroe in that 2016 class. There's been guys at Texas, and obviously Texas was very interested in getting, I think they had Chris Brown at that point locked up and were very involved in that Brandon Jones recruitment. So I'm not sure if Eric Monroe was really on the table, but they were interested in him at a time and put some effort into that recruitment and came up short. So it's not like Texas has been super successful at North Shore, and it's not like there's institutional hatred of Texas by the North Shore staff.
The North Shore staff has a huge Texas fan on it.
Yeah, there is no institutional hatred. It's just there's an affinity towards other schools at that place, and Texas just has had a tough time cracking in there over the past few cycles, and that looks to continue maybe not only in the 2020 class, but that could continue to go in 2021.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult going there, but Texas is having a good time in Duncanville, and Duncanville is also another one of those schools that just kind of churns out, or at least right now is churning out some top talent players. I mean, you got Chris Thompson, you got Savion Byrd, you got a ton of great, Jaquinnen Jackson, you got a ton of great players coming out of that program right now. So, you win some, you lose some here. Going back, where you go now that you don't have Zach Evans, but John Robinson and Jace McClellan, as you said. And Jace McClellan, I don't even know why he's still saying he's committed to Oklahoma. If he's taken all 5 of his official visits, he's still kind of looking around. He takes unofficial visits to other places other than Oklahoma. I mean, Oklahoma fans would probably crucify me for saying this, but hey, it smells like Mookie Cooper in here. It really does. So
especially when you add the fact that not an hour ago, as of this recording, Seth McGowan from Mesquite Poteet commits to Oklahoma.
And he wants to be, Jace McClellan wants to be the only running back in the class. So 2 and 2 = 4, let's get, you guys understand.
Right.
But yeah, speaking about the North Shore Duncanville stuff, Texas gets the commitment of their second quarterback in the 2020 class in Jaquinnen Jackson, who is honestly, he hates the media. This dude is like Brennan Eagles with the media. He will not speak to you. I will not be surprised if pretty soon he has the I don't speak to you media sort of outlook on life that Brennan Eagles did. But Jaquinnen Jackson does commit to Texas. He is a crazy great quarterback. He has plus running skills. He has a great arm. I was very surprised he didn't get invited to the Elite 11 alongside Hudson Card, even though Hudson Card honestly had a crazy great day at the opening in Dallas. Jaquinnen Jackson, another guy who is just a plus athlete all around and a coup for Texas to get him. I mean, Texas has honestly had trouble in the DFW area in terms of recruiting. I mean, that is just a fact. You've seen Oklahoma really start to take advantage of Texas not being able to hold on to that area with guys like Theo Weiss. I mean, Texas really did want Theo Weiss. They wanted him. They couldn't get him. The Allen pipeline, they can't get a hold of that. They're Oklahoma and Ohio State, Alabama, all these different schools really have a hold on the DFW area. Texas is really good at the Houston area, even though they kind of share it with LSU and A&M. But the DFW area has been a mess. So now getting a guy of the caliber of Jaquinnen Jackson, who honestly, he might not right now be the composite top 3 players of DFW. He's number 4. He really should be number 3, or at least number 2. I mean, they have, who is it right now? You have Jace McClellan, Drew Sanders, and then I would say right after that, Jaquinnen Jackson. And because, I mean, where do you put Jaquinnen Jackson? He could play defense, he could play wide receiver, but he's a great quarterback. So, I mean, when you look, Joe, when you see his tape on the field, what exactly are you seeing?
So, I don't think you see one of the most complex offenses for a quarterback, but that's okay when you're as talented as Duncanville is. What you see on film is a lot of misdirection, a lot of jet sweeps and stuff from the Duncanville offense that puts all these guys in conflict. You know, when you got guys like Marquez Beeson, as well as a great offensive line with guys like Savion Byrd, and then you add Jaquinnen Jackson back there, there's a lot of ways that Duncanville can hurt you. But what you see with Jackson is when he's running with the ball, he runs for like a guy who's probably 5'11", 190, except he's 6'3", and 225. Like, he moves for a guy his size, unlike, you know, most other quarterbacks. And I think, you know, he's really special with the ball in his hands. Not only that, he's got a great, like, he's got a really, really strong arm. It's a little bit of a long delivery, but it's a really strong arm and a lot to work with. It's just, he's got to, you know, basically in running kind of an option offense out of the shotgun and in the spread, he
needs to make his delivery more compact and quicker.
Right. And there's a lot in the, you know, mental acumen of being quarterback that he's got to, you know, catch up to. And that's not to say anything negative about Jaquinden. It's mostly just to say about A, the offense that he currently operates in, and B, the offense that he's going to get in at Texas. It's very complex, even though it's not a pro offense where you're under center and taking 5 and 7 step drops. There's a lot going on in that Texas offense. So he'll have time to learn that. He'll have to improve on his accuracy a lot and reading defenses, but at least as a quarterback, he's a guy who just with the ball in his hands is electric. He's a big guy. He's an unquestioned alpha on that team, on a powerhouse, which if you notice, Texas and Tom Herman have looked at powerhouses when they go after an in-state quarterback. I don't know enough about Newcastle or Southmore for Casey Thompson or Newberry Park for Cam Rising in that 2018 class, but Port Neches Groves is one of the best programs in the Golden Triangle. Westlake obviously is great. Lake Travis is a power program, and now you're going to Duncanville. Tom Herman gets these guys at these, you know, strong programs, and I think there's something to be said to that. These are guys who lead winning programs and who are at the forefront of the battle with all their teammates, and that's something that you want out of a quarterback. If he doesn't end up being a quarterback, despite that arm strength, I know that there's a lot of, it's either kind of like, okay, do you put him at linebacker, or do you put him maybe at kind of a similar position to Little Jordan Humphrey? I think you have to get the ball in his hands. I think you keep, no matter what, you keep him on offense. If quarterback doesn't work out, if, you know, the accuracy never comes, if the acumen in the offense never comes, he's a guy that you got to keep on the field. Just because I think with his combination of size and speed, he's just a guy that you have to keep on the field, have to use to, you know, score points. And I know athletes like that are rare for linebacker, especially within the state of Texas. But I think you'll be able to find some guys and keep him with the ball in his hands, and after he's shown so much ability with the ball in his hands, that you got to keep him there.
Right. And honestly, I know that he doesn't think that he is anything other than a quarterback. I mean, when you ask him, hey, are you interested in playing any other position? He's like, you know, I'll entertain it, but I am a quarterback. That is exactly what he wants to be. So it brings up an interesting question of going forward, now that he is with Texas, what happens with Hudson Card? Because you've had two really good quarterbacks, two four-star, high four-star quarterbacks in the same class with Cameron Rising and Casey Thompson. We saw not too long ago, 6 months ago, how that ended up. Not well. It ended up in honestly, quite a bit of a cluster. So what's going to happen now? Now that Hudson Card and Jaquinnen Jackson are the same class, is it going to have any immediate repercussions? Joe, probably not, right?
I don't think so. I mean, you can only glean so much from social media, but even Hudson Card said, you know, welcome, brother. Like, you know, he's in. This is Hudson Card has been, I think, a Longhorn fan for pretty much all of his life. And, you know, he knows that you don't just bring up like, oh, by the way, we're taking two quarterbacks with the first guy who jumped in. I'm almost certain that he knew that this was coming, and he seems very excited about it. it's just kind of the pattern we've seen. Texas, is, at least under Tom Herman, going 1-2, 1-2 as far as quarterback takes. And the with you know how often quarterbacks transfer, stuff like that, you've got to make sure that you have a stocked room. So even if one or two guys do leave, that you'll have talent, maybe not experience, but you'll have talent to work with. So he's definitely a little bit different than Card. Both are very great with the ball in their hands, running the football. Card is in an offense to where he's got to, you know, there's a lot of timing, a lot of accurate throws that he needs to make, and he does a really good job of that. But he's 6'3" and, you know, right maybe in the 170s, just pushing 180. So he's a guy that's not going to be, I mean, he could be ready as a passer right away, but he's not going to be ready in the physical stage. Whereas you kind of have the opposite with Jaquindon. He's not going to be ready as a passer, where he could probably hold up pretty well running against college players as a freshman. So how does this affect Hudson Card? I don't think it really does anything right now. In a couple of years when, you know, we're all anticipating that Sam Ehlinger, you know, leaves once he completes his senior season in 2020, then it's going to be, okay, who's going to win this four-person battle? And or, you know, maybe four-person battle, depending on who stays and who goes. From that class, because as we've seen, quarterback recruiting is so you have to deal with personalities and people who want immediate playing time so much. It's kind of a requirement now that you have to take 2-1 and 2-1, just because of the way the quarterback climate is, and the way also that you use quarterbacks at Texas in the run game so often.
Right. The repercussions come in the future. They come in not next year, but the year after. Like you said, when Sam's gone. But again, the difference between the quarterback drama that happened this past year versus what's going to happen in the future, there are two really strong differences here. There's one is that there may actually be some competition. So when these two guys get on the campus, and they will be redshirts after Sam Ehlinger leaves. So the door will be open to a actual quarterback battle. There won't be a guy who has already been the starter or has started some games in the past. There will be a legitimate battle for the quarterback position. So they'll have the redshirt year under them. They will have a few guys in front of them. But if they are really ready to take that next step, then they will be there for that competition. Really, Casey Thompson and Cameron Rising did not get that sort of competition. And in fact, that's kind of one of the gripes that they, main gripes that they really had, is they didn't feel like there was an actual competition because Sam Ehlinger took a hold of that that starting job and really put in a stranglehold. Nobody was taken away from Sam Ehlinger, especially after beating USC and after beating Oklahoma and winning the UGA battle. They weren't going to be seeing any starting time anytime soon. So really it was that. So there's going to be an actual quarterback competition, right? The second thing is, both these guys, while they are quarterbacks by name, they're really athletes. They're quarterbacks who are very athletic and can be used as athletes in other positions. We've already talked about how Jaquindon Jackson, you know, put him anywhere on the field, literally anywhere on the field. He could be a defense, maybe not nose tackle, maybe not, you know, defense tackle, maybe as a five tech defensive end. But anywhere on the field that is not directly on the line, and he can play. He's that talented. Hudson Card, he was a wide receiver for Lake Travis, and he only was thrown into the quarterback position when the guy who went to Ohio State went down in the game. I remember him going up against a guy like Caden Stearns when he was a wide receiver and making some great catches. He is a good athlete on top of being a quarterback. So there's a difference. Cameron Rising, Casey Thompson, they didn't really have any other positions other than quarterback. These two guys, hey, if they don't excel as quarterbacks at the University of Texas, yeah, they might want to transfer elsewhere. And hey, that's just what you're dealing with. But there's also a way that you can fit them on the field in another manner.
I'll pick one nit with you, or nit one, whatever it is. It was Matthew Baldwin's job after Charlie Brewer went to Baylor. It was definitely Matthew Baldwin's job in that season. And of course, Hudson came in after Baldwin's knee wasn't able to hold up and almost got Lake Travis to that state championship after playing receiver most of the year. But him taking over.
Was it not in the championship game? I might have gotten
that wrong. It was like, yeah, no, you're right. It was in the championship game where he had to take over. Right. But
he was going to be quarterback after Baldwin went to Ohio State. So it's not like the Lake right. Travis coaches got together and like, oh, well, guess we got to stick with him. He was always going to be a quarterback at Lake Travis, but he was so athletic that the coaches couldn't keep him out off the field at receiver. So I do understand what you're saying when it's like they're very much athletes where who are in the quarterback spot. I don't think that I'm hesitant to call both of them that, because I think that, you know, JaQuindon is a quarterback at least right now, and I can see him being successful, but I always have thought that Hudson Card was a quarterback. He's been training to be a quarterback for a while, and he was the quarterback of the JV team when Baldwin was the varsity quarterback. He's been a quarterback longer than he's had the athlete designation as a recruit. So yes, he is an athletic quarterback who can do a lot and play several different positions, but he's been a quarterback for several years, and I'm sure JaQuindon's in a similar situation, just with right. a different skill set.
I understand that. I understand. Like, that's why I'm saying they're quarterbacks, but they also have athletes. They're right. also athletes. So, right. hey, you know, if it doesn't work out, like Tyrone Swoops or Gerard Hurd, hey, you're still a really, really athletic dude. We're going to try to fit you on the field in some other manner.
So here's the other thing. This is the first – can you name the last time – that Texas got a top four composite recruit out of the DFW?
Well, since we looked for it before the show, I'm not even going to play around with that. No.
Oh, because, man.
I mean, but I understand what you're getting at. Can anybody who's listening at home right now think of the last time Texas got a top four talent out of Dallas? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and spoil it unless y'all want to pause. Okay, come back. The last time Texas got a composite top four player from the DFW area was Devin Duvernay, and that was as a result of a lot of stuff going on at Baylor, the firing of Art Briles.
They took a little help.
Them not showing up to campus and getting out of their NLI and committing to Texas when they had extra scholarships. Right. The last time that Texas, you know, got a player from the Dallas area, a top four composite player from the Dallas area to commit and, you know, sign or enroll early, was Malik Jefferson in the 2015 class. 2019, they missed on the top four. They went out of state. 2018, two of the four went out of state. 2017, two of the four went out of state. 2016, two of the four went out of state. In 2015, two of the four went out of state as well. So they've struggled to get a foothold in the top talent area in Dallas. It may not look, you know, we talked a little bit about RJ Mickens, Drew Sanders, Jace McClellan. So there's a chance that Texas could go in and possibly pull two of the top four, maybe three of the top four, depending on how things are re-ranked. But this is a big step, because this is a very prominent player, this is a prominent player who is probably at the most prominent high school program in the DFW Metroplex, at least this season.
That's a lot of P's.
I know. And recruits are going to notice that. And it also helps a little bit that in the 2021 cycle, of the five top composite players in the state are from the Dallas area. One is Tommy Brockermeyer, one is Savion Bird, one is Kamar Wheaton, the running back, who it's really tough to get a read on, and the other is Preston Stone. So,
and then even number five, Jatavion Sanders at Denton Ryan.
Right. He's a guy interested in a lot of schools, but with an interest in Texas. So the impact that JaQuindon Jackson has of, you know, showing a lot of Dallas area recruits, like, hey, you can be a Dallas area superstar, because that's what these guys are basically, and still go to Texas and succeed. So this may be, and you've seen that with Rashad Samples and even JaQuindon Jackson, I think, tweeting Dallas to Austin. They're making a full effort to try and get back into the DFW area, which is a place that OU and some out-of-state schools have been able to tap into at a far more successful rate than Texas has.
And then also having David Beatty possibly on the staff, or at least scheduled to be on the staff. I don't know if it's actually ever going to happen, if he ever gets past Kansas, I don't know. We'll get into that another day. But if once he gets past Kansas, having David Beatty on that staff, I mean, he has deep ties in Dallas. You might be able to get back a foothold in that area of the state, which is going to be huge. I mean, think about it. Dallas really is one of the best football hubs in the United States. Tons of these top-tier programs are getting a lot of their players out of Dallas. Oklahoma, who has honestly been the creme de la creme in the Big 12, gets most of their top players out of Dallas. So you need to go ahead and stop that. Put up at least a little bit of a wall. You know, a little 2-foot picket fence, white picket fence that you put up in front of your yard and say, hey, at least this is ours. And if you try to step over it, you're kind of trespassing in our property. And I might call the cops and you might not. I don't know. But that's what Texas needs to do here, is actually start to try to take a foothold in this area. And it looks like they're doing so. Tom Herman is saying, hey, you know, I'm expanding away from my Houston area and I'm going to Dallas. So, you know, that's where Quinnen Jackson is for Texas right now. He is a step in the right direction, I believe. So let's go ahead, though, and talk about some other good news for Texas in the fact that now, for the second straight year, I mean, this used to be something that wasn't a guarantee. It really wasn't under most other coaches. But for the second straight year, Texas has gotten, well, I guess if you don't count Brew McCoy, all of their signees, all their 2019 signees on campus. They're all academically eligible. They've made it. They're in the program. What a cue for Texas to get. Still, maybe not the number 3 class, maybe the number 5 class in the nation now, but the number 5, top 5 class in the nation, twice in a row on campus, everybody.
Yeah, the more you can eliminate secondary problems like kids who are, actually, it's not even a secondary problem. It's not even a secondary problem. If you don't get a kid onto campus that you offer a scholarship and sign to a letter of intent, it negatively affects the amount of kids that you're able to take in the next couple cycles, I believe. So
right.
This is why I think a lot of people make a big deal about the mental evaluation and, you know, getting grades and stuff like that. I think there's been a massive overemphasis at times about it, but it's still a big deal. And why you hear Tom Herman mention the R kind of guy, you know, good programs, good family stuff so often in press conferences when he's talking about recruiting, is because it removes a headache. Like, if you don't have to worry about anybody, you know, if you don't have to worry about, I don't know, when was the last, Damian Miller, what was it?
LeGarrion Carson.
Yeah, well, he never even signed, I don't believe, or Eric Fowler or something like that. It's so much easier for a program heading into the season to not have to worry about that thing at all. And for Tom Herman to identify, get two full classes, with the exception of Brew McCoy, on campus with no problems, no drama up until the minute that, you know, the first classes start in the fall, it's a plus. It's a plus that you'd rather have than over a negative you'd rather not worry about.
Right. I feel like a lot of people think that at least I'm negative on the show when I really think I'm kind of realistic, but this is something that not a lot of people are talking about. I mean, I don't think I've seen anybody else on Twitter talk about this, but this is something that's actually a really big deal and a really huge positive for Texas. So I think getting that on is great for Tom Herman. I think it speaks to the mental evaluations that they've done for these kids, and you know, keep doing it. It's been working. It's killing. So there's not really much to say on that, other than I guess the last part of good news for Texas has been, well, besides a really good draft and a lot of the guys who, you know, you recruited, like Jared Southard, He and Silas Ardwin. How do you say his name?
Are you talking about Ohio State or Houston players?
No, I'm a little Jared lost Southard here. And Silas Ardwin, who were
Texas baseball. Aside
those guys sticking around.
Yeah, basically, like, I was not diving into the baseball discussion. I've been telling people not to worry about Brett Beatty at all because I mean, he's too good. He's too good to play in college, and that's not the fault of the Texas coaches. They thought he was going to be, you know, he's a local product who's pretty darn good, and they were looking forward to him being on campus. And then he goes and almost hits 700 this year for Lake Travis. So
crazy.
You know, that's you can't really foresee somebody hitting almost 700 And it makes a lot of sense that he's going to go on, I believe, with the Mets, barring anything extremely unforeseen. But Trey Faltin, Antoine Duplantier, I believe, and then the two guys you mentioned, I think, from the Austin area, Arduin and I forgot the other one's name. This wasn't really a class where there were a ton of worries about MLB draft coming and calling. I last year, I remember Ty Madden and I think Corey Hall. Maybe not Corey Holland. There was at least three or four guys who got drafted last year, and I think two of them ended up signing with their MLB team and not coming to Texas. And for, you know, this is a class that has a decent amount of pitching in it. Excuse me, not so much pitching, but they've got more position players in it. They even added a JUCO a couple weeks ago. As far as the high school class goes, this is a one that'll help and, you know, build some depth at some good positions and also bring in some starter caliber guys to play in the field. So the fact that they weren't hit hard by the draft is really good news. As far as the guys in the program, I can preface this with saying that MLB teams don't waste top 10 round picks. If you're getting picked up in a single digit round, that's because they mean business with you. So for juniors like Blair Henley and David Hamilton, you have to take that in mind. I know that those are two guys who really enjoy their time at Texas. I believe Blair's and was part of several other, you know, non-baseball organizations, and you know, they have worked hard, part of a team that got to Omaha last year. But teams don't waste picks on when they're in the top 10 rounds. And you have to remember that although college baseball and playing, you know, everybody wants to keep playing at the next level. And when you're in high school and grow up in Texas, often playing college and baseball is in Texas is what your dream is. But the real dream is to be in the major leagues. And that's a goal for all these guys, and to be within reach and to have an opportunity to fight through the minor leagues and bust around for a couple years to get up to the show is something a lot of these guys have been chasing for all their life. So that's kind of the outlook I look at it when you're talking about guys picked in the top 10 rounds. Ryan Reynolds was not, I think he was in the 14th round by the Cubs, which is still a very high round draft pick, but I'm not exactly sure where that one's going to go. He comes from a UT family, I believe. His dad, Shane, who threw one of the best splitters, probably the second best splitter in Astros history. Well, maybe top five, now that I think of who the Astros had. He's a UT family. He's been a leader on this team for the past couple of years, played a lot of games at third base, played a lot of good defense. If he were to move on and go to decide that he wanted to go to the MILB, then, you know, Texas still has options with guys like Peter Guybe, Sam Bertelsen. There's still some corner infield guys available for Texas for the next season. But if the 14th round pick Ryan Reynolds does decide to move on, that's still a big loss, because that's a guy that's played a lot of baseball for Texas, has a very, very commanding presence in the clubhouse, and really, you know, hasn't had the best of luck. Like, he came into this year with a little bit of some injury issues that were nagging during the fall. He said they were healthy, but he was fully healthy, but the season did not play out as best as anybody expected, obviously. So I think those are some things you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about the MLB draft and how it affects a college baseball team, especially one that thinks of itself as highly as Texas does. The fact that, you know, they lost Brett Beatty and got basically everybody else from their high school class back is a huge bonus. And, you know, I don't know if this class will be as highly ranked as the one last year that I think D1 called top. I think they called it either 7th or 8th, which was the first top 10 pick, first top 10 class in several years. But it's a class that, you're starting to get more and more classes that are fully 100% filled, and I think it should be at this stage already 100% filled by guys that David Pierce had committed to Texas. And this, I know that coaches abhor the prospect of, like, these are my own guys, like, everybody's my guy in my program, some that type of thing. But these are you're starting to see classes now that are fully composed of guys that David Pierce and his staff have scouted, developed relationships with, and recruited. And so I think that's, you know, just an interesting thing to watch in this program the next couple of years, is how those guys, not only how the staff bounces back from, or attempts to bounce back from a 500 season, but how the guys that they have brought in and, you know, completely own that process from the start, end up at, and how their career fares at Texas.
Yeah. If y'all couldn't tell, I kind of sprung that entire topic on Joe, and I think you did a wonderful job. But another guy, another Austin prospect, a guy coming out of Austin, I got to give a shout-out to Scott Politz, who I grew up with his brother, went to school with his brother. He's friends with my younger brother. He's now he went to Yale, was an all-Ivy League player, and now he is picked up by the St. Louis Cardinals in the 29th round, so I might be getting a jersey sometime soon. But speaking of guys who might be getting, I don't know how to transition to this one. Anyways, let's go talk about some other good news for Texas, as Sam Ellinger is now the cover boy again for Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. So, Joe, in a historical context, what does this mean?
Well, if you read every year like I do Dave Campbell's Texas Football, the cover's a big deal. They count down the days till the cover comes out, and you know, this is the one of the most influential magazines that's released in across sports, I'd have to say, especially across it's a very specific niche sport, but it's a very influential magazine in that sport. They do a very good job of trying to bounce between everybody kind of in state. Last year, if you remember, they had Jimbo Fisher on the cover. The year before that, they had Tom Herman. The year before that, they had Cliff Kingsbury and Patrick Mahomes, along with Sam Ellinger and Todd Dodge. Like, they do a good job to try and balance everything. Even Baylor and TCU and have had covers. But you know, for obviously this could be the best player in the state this year. I think that's I don't think that's a super hot take, and it's very indicative of Sam's personality. Confident smile on the front of the cover, bring it on. Here's the hate and the hype, and he's ready. That sounds about like Sam Ellinger that we watch play and hear speak in media settings. So it makes a lot of sense for him to be on the cover. Two-time cover, if you consider the secondary cover with Todd Dodge as one of those, and then the first, I think, Texas quarterback, or at least player in a Texas jersey, because Jonathan Gray was in an Aledo jersey when it happened. First player in a Texas jersey since Colt McCoy back in 2009, right. So 10 years ago. So it's not a huge deal, but it's a noteworthy thing in the state of Texas that, you know, the story this year for football within this state's borders, the main storyline this year, at least how Dave Campbell sees it, is Sam Ellinger, and if he's able to lead the Longhorns into, you know, additional success in his junior year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is these covers are the top of the top stories for that year. Maybe not always the top, because they, again, like you said, they balance it out, but at least it is one of the top two stories in the state. The other one might be, you know, there are so many new coaches in the state right now who's going to do well. There's another one of, hey, Jimbo Fisher, can you do better in the second year? Hey, Tom Herman, can you do better in the second year? But Sam Ellinger and what he has shown over the past year really kind of puts him, I mean, there's a reason there are Vegas odds on him being a Heisman contender. I wouldn't put my money on it. My brother did. I think it's dumb. But there is a reason that there's that possibility in Vegas, because there's an outside shot at it. Now, obviously, I think you're dumb if you put money on the Blues to go to the Stanley Cup back in January.
There
but,
it is.
You know, yeah. But
had to wait
again,
50 minutes, but you got it.
No, dude, it was coming. It was building up. It was like a volcano. But Sam Ellinger being on this cover, it really speaks to, hey, something that we've been talking about for quite a while. I mean, honestly, back when he was in high school, and there was a lot of impatience around Sam Ellinger, but you and I kind of held fast on this, saying, hey, this guy is special. Now, Dave Campbell feels that way too. So I think that's where we're going to end it off on sort of a high note. We started off on the low note of Brew McCoy and Zach Evans. And what that all meant, we're going to end off the high note of, hey, you know, Sam Ehlinger, Texas has a lot of good things coming down the pipeline. This next year is going to be big. So I think that'll be your fourth and five. Y'all, that has been your Longhorn Nation podcast. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or at texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com, where you can find my writing. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you? You
can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89. You can find all my stuff on InsideTexas.com.
You guys can find our other shows and other podcasts in general on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Podbean, anywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening, and we will see y'all in another week. Hook 'em.